You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty.
Welcome back to 7:55 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic. I'm with Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. Eric, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
A little sore from your 5K?
Yeah, man. I ran 3 miles yesterday. I haven't ran distance in a while, and I feel like I got ran over by a truck.
Did you win your H division?
I don't even know. I mean, it wasn't even recorded or anything. I would have definitely lost. I was trying to keep up with this lady who's probably 60. She was
you won her age division.
That was my pace runner.
Well, the offseason is going about as slow as we thought it would. Actually, the Braves have made a couple of moves, minor things early. The Smiley thing was pretty big. We'll get to that in a little bit. Drew Smiley, I think that was a good move. We'll get to that. The big news, I guess, right now has been both the Hall of Fame ballot being released and someone who probably had a real good shot at the Hall of Fame no longer having a shot, because Robinson Cano, man, is kind of an idiot any way you look at it.
I heard that news and I just stared at the wall for like 45 minutes trying to think like him, trying to think what the thought process was behind, you know, whatever he's taken. It's November. That's not going to last till spring training anyway, but I just don't understand. I couldn't come up with any reasoning for why he would do that at this point.
In case anybody missed it, Robinson Cano, the Mets second baseman, 38 years old now, actually, turned 38 in October, tested positive for a steroid. And I was told it was like a kind of a old school steroid, yeah, too, really. It was like one that
Stanozolol, I think it's called.
Yeah, that Palmeiro had used back in the day when he got caught, like 15, 20 years ago it was used. But this is the second positive test for Cano. He tested positive for a diuretic before years ago, and that was a masking agent for steroids. So that was considered a PED positive test too. So he knew that if he tested positive again, what the penalties would be and all that.
And still chanced it.
And he still did it. And he's 38 years old. And a guy, if you look at his stats, I think 8-time All-Star, 5-time Silver Slugger, 2-time Gold Glover, All-Star MVP. This is a guy that finished top 5 MVP, which is something I really look at, 5 times, and top 10, 6 times, and a 17. This is a guy probably headed to the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. I would have voted for 303 AV. Well, I probably wouldn't have because of the first positive test, but the point is a lot of people would have, and his stats are Hall of Fame worthy. 303 average, 844 OPS as a second baseman, 334 homers and 1,302 ribbies. I mean, across the board, 571 doubles. This is a guy that was probably Hall of Fame bound, if not for the steroids. But now a second test, forget it. Even people that would have been lenient on a first test are probably not going to be now. I don't think even, you know, be like Gary Sheffield now, who has Hall of Fame numbers. And he didn't even have a positive test.
People still won't vote for him. Yeah.
He had the connection, though.
He had a connection.
Yeah, basically admitted using it, the bonds, the cream, and said he didn't know what it was. But he hasn't even got like 30%, barely 30% of the – and he's got Hall of Fame numbers, Gary Sheffield. Slam dunk. So Cano can kiss that goodbye now. And his reputation is just ruined.
Yeah, like I said, I just don't understand the motive unless it's something that he's done. And that's kind of what it makes you think when a guy is still willing to, like, that's the only way he knows. You know, it's the only way you know how to do it is with right. this assistance. And that's kind of what it makes you think.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I always feel so naive because I think the testing's so good and the penalty's so harsh and what it does to your reputation that, like, I'd never risk it, you know, unless if someone told you 100% there's zero chance you fail, then you find out, you know, what guys are kind of crazy. But with the chances that you would fail and they'd catch you, I don't know how anybody can chance it in today's game. And so I always think the game's pretty clean. And then you always find out, you know, yeah, like yeah. I wind up looking stupid every year. I have this conversation with friends and tell them I don't think really anybody's doing it. And then a guy like Robinson Cano with nothing to gain from it, right. you know, at this point, except
already
you know,
has his contract.
Everything. He's got 2 years left. He's got 3 years left. You know, I mean, there's nothing to gain for him here other than, you know, just stroking his own ego. And he's still willing to chance it and gets popped.
This is a guy that had his career high 39 homers in his age 33 season.
Yeah. So,
you know, all of a sudden you start looking at all his stats and going, okay, what would he have done without it? Was he doing it most of his career, whatever? It's kind of like A-Rod, you know? I mean, you don't know how much of A-Rod's career was fake, you know, or how much it was enhanced.
Yeah.
Some people think he was doing it since high school in Miami, you know? We just don't know. But when you get popped a second time, you can make excuses for the first time for the masking agent, and some people will buy it too. But second time, nobody's buying it now. Now you're just looked at as a guy that had to do it to be good, which is, you know,
you made a shit ton of money. You get your money, but you're not getting in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think most people take the money anyway, and that's probably the logic. But
and he's already got the money, you know. He's made over $200 million.
That's what I'm saying. I get it when it's a guy like we had Melky in 2010, right. I think it was, and
trying
he just
to revive his career.
He could. Well, he did. I mean, if you think about it, he was. He couldn't do anything with us in Atlanta. He just looked – he looked big and slow. Didn't look as athletic. He wasn't hitting. And then he went to Kansas City the next year and he looked like Bo Jackson going first to third. And we all kind of were looking at it like, all right, this is a little fishy. But I know, you know, he's good friends with Cano, I'm pretty sure. But we were looking at it like this is not looking right. And sure enough, he got popped a year or two later. But, you know, what I've heard is that – I mean, this is just me talking to guys. I don't have any source here, any real info. But what I've heard is that these guys have this protocol they can follow where the dosage is just under the amount that triggers a failed test. Uh-huh. And if they follow the protocol their doctor gives them, they can beat the system. You know, it's a dose that if you take it at a certain time of day, by the time they test you, you know, and you have these windows where you know you're not going to get tested. You go to bed at 11 o'clock at night, you know you got 10 hours before they could test you. So they have these ways where they can kind of manipulate it and beat it. But if they get sloppy and mess up their protocol, they can fail. And I think that's kind of what's happened with all the guys that have gotten caught. They just got a little sloppy with their protocol.
Well, it makes you you raise an eyebrow now. You look at his numbers this year. He's age 37 season, right?
He hits 316.
He had not hit over 303 since his age 31 season in 2014 when he hit 314. So, you know, he goes from hitting 256 in 2019 to hitting 316 this year. OPS in 736 with 13 homers in 107 games in 2019 to OPS in this year, 896 with 10 homers. I mean, you know, it just don't make any sense. And you look at the numbers and you're like, okay, now he got a lot of that. He had a great year. Maybe he's looking at what can I do in a full year?
Yeah.
Maybe I can get to four homers before this contract's up.
400, so, yeah. Well, but you look at the year after he got popped. He got popped in 2018, came back and hit 256. So, you know, that might have been him trying to do it
clean,
natural, you know. Yeah. And that's kind of how it looks when you look at it.
Which just is by the lowest numbers batting average of his career.
Yeah.
The year after he got popped. That didn't help much, did it, his case? And his lowest OPS since 2008. Anyway, enough about Robinson Cano. The Mets, while we're on the subject, have a new owner, and he is the richest individual owner in baseball now. Now, if you look at like
he just
Malone,
got $24 million richer too.
Yes, he did. He saves that $24 million of Robinson Cano's contract. Some people ask me, does Cano still get paid? No, he does not get paid for this season he's suspended. Cohen, their owner, is worth about $15 billion. The only guy I think in baseball that would be higher would be Liberty Media's chief or the head, but he's Malone of Liberty Media is worth far more than that. But the team's owned by Liberty, not by Malone. Malone doesn't spend his money on the Braves. So this kind of apples and oranges. So he's not really even comparable. You know, it's a corporation that owns the Braves. So really, Cohen's the richest guy in the sport now. And a lot of people are looking at it like the rest of the NL East teams might be a little, should be a little concerned because I know the Mets have found a way to Mets it all year after year after year, you know, but they've got kind of, I don't want to say unlimited resources, but they've got a lot more resources now than they've had in a long time since before the Bernie Madoff scandal.
Well, that's kind of what kept them. I mean, that crippled them, right?
Yeah. For years. That hurt them for years. You know, and being second fiddle to the Yankees all these years, you know, the new guy comes in. We've talked about this last week, how he didn't experience the hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars in losses like all the other baseball owners did last year. He's coming in this fresh. He just bought a team.
No, so he doesn't some have fantasy those baseball vibes going. Right. Like, this is just fun for him.
And he's talking and tweeting with fans. You got to think he's going to come in and make a big splash. I could see them going out and doing a thing. Like, I mean, if they're smart, they'll go out and get a guy like Lindor or something, you know, a huge piece. Because why not? You got a chance, man. You got a chance to make an impact while the other teams are kind of licking their wounds and pulling back a little bit from the losses, the financial losses last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I think the part of me thinks it might be really hard for the Braves to sign Ozuna back is because this guy was just going to be playing by a different set of rules.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things working against the Braves with Ozuna as long as the DH is undecided. Now, if the DH is decided, that helps, obviously, because if you're the Braves, I think you got to be a lot more inclined to go all in or, you know, you're still not going to get in a huge bidding war for him.
No, because if they want him, they're going to get him. That's kind of what I'm saying.
Right.
If this guy wants to, he can go as high as he wants.
Or an AL team decides, you know, he's our DH. That's the guy we're going to build our lineup around. You know, the Braves lineup's built around Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
There might be some AL team. The Tigers might say, hey, he's our new Miggy, you know? You never just never know. So it's going to be interesting. He changed his agents. Ozuna did because he's going to get serious this offseason. So nothing new to report as far as the DH. There's still not even a word on when it might be decided. I mean, maybe they've discussed it, like when they might, you know, get together on this. But so far, neither the players or the owners have said, they've given any indication when they're going to talk about this, as far as I know. I haven't read anything or heard anything. So that kind of handcuffs the Braves. Real quick on the Hall of Fame ballot. Why don't I just go through these names real quick? And you want to give me a yay or nay real fast? You up for that?
Sure, but I think everybody's a Hall of Famer.
Take off your player hat and just look at them, you know, and your friends' hats and all that. And just
I'll try.
It's different this year. We don't have the slam dunk first ballot guys we've had for years. All that backlog is kind of out now on guys that deserve to be in the Hall but kept getting kind of left off because there were so many ahead of him, like first ballot guys. So, and then we cleared the first ballot guys. We cleared the backlog. Now we're left with a lot of guys that are kind of some on the fence, some steroid, a lot of steroid guys, and a couple I think are really deserving. At least a couple. So, but let's go through here.
Okay.
Just real quick. Bobby Abreu.
Man, no, but.
No, for me. I hear you. Bobby Abreu's a damn good player. Yeah. Underrated.
That's why I struggle so much because you look at the numbers he put up and how long he did it for. Hall of Fame is a tough club to get into.
Barry Bonds, nay for me, steroids. Everybody knows why I don't vote for him.
I say, yeah. And my thought is that. All these guys should get in because it's an era of history I kind of want acknowledged, but they shouldn't get – anybody caught cheating shouldn't get a ceremony. You should just get put in, and half your ballot should talk about your steroid history. You know, when your plaque should have steroids written on it.
Yeah. Mark Burley.
No.
Yeah. I agree with you. I shouldn't say yeah. Yeah, he's a really good pitcher. Kind of right below borderline to me. He is a borderline guy, but right below it to me. But he's going to get votes.
I think of dominance, you know. I think of just dominance.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't dominant. He was just good for a long time. Yeah. A long time. Yeah. AJ Burnett, no.
Nope.
Although I watched him throw a 9-walk, 1-hit batter, no hitter. I covered that.
Well, that sums it up, though, is why I covered it's a no.
His, exactly, man. You know,
it's like he can do some crazy stuff, but
he was a damn good pitcher. He had a nasty knuckle curve, he called it. But yeah, he threw a 9-walk, 1-hit batter, no hitter at San Diego. Where about 6 innings in, I had to put my popcorn down and go, oh, shit, I got to write a story. It was East Coast time, you know, and they were holding the presses because I thought, you know, no way Scott's going to last. He's got like 2 runners on each inning or bases loaded every inning. But he kept getting out of jams.
Ubaldo Jimenez did that against us in, I think, 2009. Yep. And we got to about the 7th or 8th inning before we even realized we were watching a dominant start. And then it was a no-hitter.
Amazing thing was AJ did that, 9 walks, 1-hit batter, I think about 7 strikeouts, no hitter. And he did it in like 129 pitches. I don't even know how you do that. whole lot of first pitches put in play on the ball, on the ones that weren't walks or strikeouts.
Yeah, it must have been.
Roger Clemens, same thing before with Bonds for me. I guess the same thing for you.
Yeah. I say put them in and just talk about their, you know, not a glorified thing where you put them in and honor them, but almost just this is one of the highest level baseball's ever been played at, especially with Bonds. The baseball's never been played at a higher level, so put them in and just talk.
I don't disagree. I mean, he was the greatest player I ever saw, but yeah. I'm not going to vote. I just draw the line, and I'm not going to vote for cheaters. And the thing is, all right, guys, I know did steroids, or in my mind, I know. And people go, how do you know he didn't do it? I go, I don't know he didn't do it. Maybe he did. But here's one that I know did. Okay. Yeah. And I will agree with those who vote for him because they say he was a Hall of Famer before Without he started it. Doing them. I totally agree. In Pittsburgh, before he started doing roids. Yes. In Pittsburgh, was the best player in the game for about 3 or 4 years. And arguably was a first ballot Hall of Famer before he became a steroid home run hitting freak. Nevertheless, I'm not going to vote for a guy because he did cheat and he screwed a lot of people out of jobs and their livings because of it. You know, other players.
Yeah.
Other, you know, people that got, you know, screwed because of it. So, and by comparison.
I guess, you know, it's also just hard to tell when somebody started because if you told me you look at Cano's career, who knows?
Oh, I know. Some guys are right.
I guess that's a good point, too.
Bonds, it was not hard to tell when he started.
No, he gained like 40 pounds of muscle and his head grew 7 hat sizes.
Yeah, it was when he went from 185 pound looking like Hank Aaron to looking like a middle linebacker.
He looked like a professional wrestler.
A bodybuilder, yeah. Exactly. Michael Kadire, no.
No.
Dan Heron, no. Hawkins, I'm sorry.
Nope.
LaTroy Hawkins, no. Todd Helton, yes for me.
I say yes.
Okay. I mean, his numbers, I know you can say Coors Field, disparity home road, but this guy was a dominant hitter for a long time, face of the franchise, and had good numbers on the road too, just not, you know, like he did at Coors Field. It wasn't as close as like Larry Walker.
Right.
But my God, the numbers Todd Helton put up. Oof. Tim Hudson. He's a borderline guy.
Yeah.
You know, I try to put myself outside of knowing him and watching him and knowing how good he was because I saw so many of his starts. And, God, he was a tough dude, you know, and he was so big for the Braves for a long time when they didn't have a whole lot else. I would tend to go no, but, you know, it's not a slam dunk for me. I almost like would give him a vote just to keep him on a ballot for a while to let him, you know, so that we can continue to look at him. Maybe his case changes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You hate seeing guys fall off when, you know, guys that fall off because some guys linger on it that aren't deserving at all. And this guy was really good for long. If you look at his numbers, there aren't going to be many more guys that ever win 220 games like he did.
No, no.
And have that winning percentage with it. It wasn't like he lost 200.
No, 625. He had a
great winning percentage.
Yeah.
So he's interesting. Torrey Hunter, that's an interesting one too.
That's where defense is. You know,
it's 9 gold gloves.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I say no, but I would want him. I'd be real happy if he was, you know.
Right. So maybe you vote to keep him on a ballot?
Yeah, I mean, he hit 350 homers. He's kind of like Andrew, though.
He's kind of like
I think
almost like a poor man's Andrews. Same thing.
Yeah, if you watch him play every day, you know, I didn't see Torrey play that much because I was in the National League, and and when I did see him play, he was getting older. But a guy that wins all those gold gloves, I mean, I think you – that's where I feel like the testimony from guys that played against him, you know, right, year in, year out, and teammates and stuff like that should really be taken into consideration, because when I hear the testimony from teammates of Andrew Jones, like, it leaves no doubt in my mind.
Right, exactly. I think most people say similar things about Torrey. They don't say he's the greatest center fielder ever like they do Andrew.
That's why when I hear that, I'm like, he's got to be in that.
Right. And I shouldn't say poor man's Andrew Jones, because that's kind of slapping the face of Torrey Hunter. He's better than that. I mean, he's a damn good player who's probably going to get a lot of votes. You know, I don't think he won't get in for a while at least, but he's a guy that I think people will consider. And I wouldn't have a strong disagreement if he got in at all. I mean, I can see it for the same reason Andrew did. He's like got a lot higher average than Andrew, lesser home runs, more RBIs, I think, similar stolen bases, one less gold glove. But he clearly was not Andrew defensively for that decade that Andrew dominated. But he was damn good. I don't know. And everybody says great guy, Torrey Hunter, that played with him.
Oh, yeah. I've interacted with him like twice, and he made me laugh both times just walking by in a hallway.
Andrew Jones, yes. I voted for him every year.
Yeah.
Jeff Kent, I vote for him, yes. I don't like his personality, and I know he was divisive on some teams, and I know his defense wasn't great, but his numbers are overwhelming for a second baseman. To me, he's a Hall of Famer for sure.
Yeah. that's just the personality clause that sometimes gets thrown into it. It shouldn't be a thing.
Andy Pettit needs no steroid. The steroid thing plus his numbers are just not terrific. I mean, not slam dunk Hall of Famer, but the steroid thing bothers me.
Yeah, I'd say no on him too. Just I don't know. I mean, some of the stuff he did in the playoffs and playing for that team and handling that pressure, I really respect. But the pure dominance, I didn't think was there.
Great postseason pitcher, no doubt.
Yeah.
Aramis Ramirez, no. No. Manny Ramirez, steroids, no.
I think Manny, same concept for me. It's just you put him in and don't honor him, but yeah.
Scott Rowland, yes for me.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go. Curt Schilling, Jeff Kent, but a far worse personality. I can't say how much I disagree with Curt Schilling outside of baseball, with everything he says politically, with the stuff he says, that just everything. You guys know the controversies. I can't disagree more with him and with his personality.
You hate
I just
him.
Think he's – I can't stand him, man. Yeah. I can't stand the things he says. But he is, to me – no doubt a Hall of Famer, and I vote for him.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm voting for him. Gary Sheffield, I said last week, second greatest player I ever covered, all-around player behind Chipper. I don't vote for him because, unfortunately, the steroid thing. But I think
– what was the story with him and steroids? Because I didn't think he failed the test.
He worked out with Barry and used the same cream that Barry did, the steroid cream. Got it shipped to him, and that was discovered. And then later he basically said, I didn't know what it was. He didn't deny using it. He just said, I didn't know what it was.
That's a tough one, because I believe that.
I hate not voting for him. I hate not voting for Gary Sheffield because he was so great. But I can't – to me, it's just hypocritical. I can't not vote for him. I mean, I can't not vote for Barry Bonds. And I can't – you know what I mean? If I know a guy did steroids, I'm just not going to vote for him. And that's just the way I am. But I totally understand people that would say, this guy to me, it wasn't wasn't proven, or this guy, was a Hall of Famer before he did them. I'm not going to argue with other people. They can have their own standards and whatever. That's cool. But that's just me.
I wonder if there was ever a year, though, in his, I guess 2000, he hit 43 homers. Hit 325. I mean, that same time frame where he kind of admitted to using it, his numbers did spike a little bit.
Yeah, he went from great to Bonds great.
Yeah, that's tough. I always look at guys, too, when they're like 38, 39, 40 and still look the same as they did when they were 25. And it's one of two things. It's either cheating or they're just gifted from God. Like Billy Wagner, there's no doubt in my mind that he was just gifted, you know, from the moment he was born to throw a baseball. Because when he played with us in 2010, he was still throwing 98 and could have kept going.
You know, that, strong.
Yeah, just special. So, I mean, I think Sheffield's like that too. But, yeah, I guess if you admit it, you know, there's no way telling. I'd still put him in because he's got the numbers.
Yeah. Well, at least he didn't deny using it, you know.
Yeah. Score some points there.
Unlike the next guy on the list, Sammy Sosa, nope, negative.
And he's the only one where I'd say, like, it was so obvious with him that, you know, maybe because the rest of these guys were pretty damn good before they got associated with it. But right. Sosa, it seemed like that might have been the whole deal.
His whole thing, yeah. Yeah, kind of like Mark McGwire. I hate to say it, but I mean, Mark McGwire, you look at his body, how his body changed when he got to the majors after, in college, for instance. Look at pictures of that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, like Sosa went from 25 to 35 a year to 66.
Oh, yeah, he was ridiculous.
You know, that's when you do that, and that the heart of his numbers that really make him qualified is from 98 to 2002. He's hitting 60 homers a year. You know, then you look at when you're looking at the big picture and you take out those 5 years, you know, maybe he's not. He hit 292 homers in 5 years. that's a whole career.
That's horrible. Nick Swisher, the excitement. Hall of Fame, yes. Mr. Excitement.
Yeah.
Mr. Positive. The Hall of Fame, no. Shane Victorino, the Flying Hawaiian. Love him. Not a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Omar Vizquel. A lot of people say he was the greatest, or not the greatest shortstop, but the most stylish shortstop. I'll agree. Spectacular. He played forever. More innings than anybody ever at the position. Made some unbelievable plays, highlight reels off the charts. To me, offense counts for something, and he was not a good hitter, and I don't vote for him.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. What do all the WAR numbers and all that stack up with a guy like Vizquel?
His WAR's not great. Like Ozzie Smith had like 70 some WAR, and Vizquel was like 40 some.
Oh, he's 45. So I wonder what. I just, I like looking at it from that angle too, just to see, but
yeah,
I don't know, playing that kind of defense for that long, for, I mean, 24
look
years.
At his numbers, man.
Yeah. 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 I'd say I mean, great to have though.
Yeah. Boy, he made some plays. He was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Two more. Billy Wagner. Yay. Yes. I vote for him. More dominant than Trevor Hoffman.
I don't understand how there's a debate.
I don't either. And I don't understand why he hasn't had like over 30-some percent. Because if you just line his numbers up with Trevor Hoffman, the only thing Trevor did was pitch like another 4 years.
Yeah.
But Jesus, Billy did it for like 16 years. That should be enough.
As a relief pitcher, that's got to be long enough.
But his stats are just so much better than Trevor's in most every meaningful category.
But that's the dominance I'm talking about. Like, there's never been a hitter alive that saw Billy Wagner on the mound and got excited. For 16 years, you know, nobody wanted to face the guy, and he dominated. And if you looked at how much he was dominating in 2010 with us, like, that's who he was.
30, 38.
Especially, you know, another thing, too, when it comes to – to pitchers that pitched in the steroid era, you need to get a big bonus for that because that's the toughest it's ever been to pitch.
And he was during the whole steroid era,
the whole time
of his career.
The whole time.
Yeah. And, good point. And,
you know, knowing for a fact he was clean when we played together in 2008 or 2010, and he was still throwing 98 with the most disgusting slider you've ever seen. You know, for me, that him still being able to do that, regardless of if he, I don't think there's ever been any association with him and steroids anyway. None. But there's no doubt in my mind that guy did it all clean.
Yeah, I don't understand. I think he's going to get a big jump this year, with a lot of those guys off the ballot. You know, I think he'll get a big jump. I think Andrew will finally get a big jump, but it's criminal that Andrew's percentage is so low that some people are still voting, I think, purely on batting average, you know, which in this day and age, that should not be a big factor for a power hitter. His on-base percentage was not good, but it wasn't bad, you know. I mean, he had a higher on-base percentage than, say, Hawk, Andre Dawson, my favorite player of all time, you know, and Hawk's in. But
I just, you know, with him, if people say he's the best I've ever seen do something that right. played a long time in the game, and he wasn't, you know, Fiskell, like you're looking at his numbers offensively. Andrew hit a lot of home runs. How many home runs did Andrew hit?
400 and
yeah,
430 some or whatever. You got it in front of you?
I'm pulling it up.
Oh yeah, 420 some, 430 some.
434 homers and yeah. playing the best center field anybody's ever seen. You know,
and I mean, postseason stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, just the gold, 10 straight gold gloves. Come on, man. It just
how many times has that even been done?
And so much of the fall off, not by many people other than say Brooks Robinson and a couple of pitchers like Maddox and Cott. Arenado's going to do it. He's got 8 right now. He might do it. He should do it. And so much of his fall off, drop off, you know, I'm not making excuses for him. Well, I guess I am making excuses. But his fall off when he went to the Dodgers and signed that contract, I was told that he played the last couple of years with the Braves especially, and then when he moved or when he went on, he was playing with banged up shoulders from all those catches that he made.
Yeah.
All those years of it caught up with him. And I think the weight gain had a lot to do with that too. You know, playing hurt. You know, Murph played the last 5-6 years of his career or 8 years of his career banged up. He should have stopped playing, but he wanted to keep playing. And, you know, Andrew, I'm sure still thought he was a great outfielder even when he was, you know, overweight and, you know, or they could still hit home runs when they moved him to DH. But, you know, a lot of that fall off was from being hurt and playing hurt. You know, from being running into walls and making those ridiculous catches that he made all those years, diving, coming in, landing. Man, if you land like he did
yeah.
on those diving catches going forward, I don't know how you don't hurt your shoulders doing that, you know, once every game.
Well, that's something a lot of people didn't know about Ichiro, and they never noticed is Ichiro didn't dive.
Yeah.
He didn't dive.
You're right.
Yeah, like you're not going to find a clip of Ichiro diving. He would only do a slide or try to run through the ball, but – I mean, you almost have to consider that with Andrew playing the way he did yep. and covering that ground. And that's part of why I wouldn't, you know, you don't want to see Acuña out there in center field too much because it's
exactly
you're all over the place and involved in so many more plays. But like you look at a guy like Ichiro and he put up his numbers and always stayed healthy and did everything, but he didn't dive. And that was something that pitchers would criticize him for a lot because balls would get down and his reasoning was he was faster if he ran through it. But, you know, a lot of guys would say he was afraid to get hurt. He wouldn't sell out for the team, things like that. I didn't know the difference. He was so fast, but yeah, but you watch stuff like that and you think if a guy played his ass off and got so beat up diving around and becoming the best center fielder anybody's ever seen. And that was the price he had to pay. Then, I mean, it's hard to dock him for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point about Ichiro. I never even thought about that. But
never seen him dive.
Look at him play till in his 40s.
Yeah, because you know? He was careful with healthy. His body. Yeah.
But, man, if I would say go out and try it and do it yourself, but people will break their, you know, their backs and hurt a disc yeah. if they do. But if you can imagine doing what Andrew did, and a lot of times he was playing on that turf like in Montreal all those years. Some places still had turf when he started his yeah. career.
Well, that's what killed Griffey. The turf yeah. At the Kingdome.
And Andre Dawson. But if you do what Andrew did and you dive and you make a diving catch with both your hands out and you're landing on your chest man. And your arms extended, the stress that puts on your limbs, your shoulders, I mean, God, he must have been sore every day when he woke up the next day.
Man, we rented a bounce house on Halloween, and I jumped in that thing with my kids for 25 minutes maybe, and the next day I couldn't walk. You know what I mean? Like, you think about doing that on a hard surface for your living. I mean, it's – I don't know. I mean, I just if somebody says he's the best center fielder they've ever seen, somebody like Terry Pendleton or Eddie Perez, guys that have been in the game forever, and he hit 434 homers, I don't know what the debate is.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'll share this with you now. I was going to write this. I was talking to Terry Pendleton last week for the Freddie Freeman story. And we got to talking about Andrew. And I'm scrolling down here to my notes. What he said. We were talking about Pache.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people comparing Pache to Andrew. And John Smoltz said on the, you know, went out of his way on the playoff broadcast to say, I don't think we should put that pressure on him. It's not really fair to compare him to Andrew, who's the best I've ever seen. And Terry said, I agree with Smoltz, you know, because he's seen Pache. Terry's seen Pache play a lot in the minors, said the guy's done some unbelievable things, but it's not fair to put that comparison. It's not fair for him or for Andrew.
Or Andrew, Jones. Yeah.
But here's what TP told me. Great story. He said he was having a conversation with Andrew in San Francisco, TP, when TP was coaching. Willie Mays, the Willie Mays, comes over and says to interrupts, you know, his nose TP, comes over, starts talking to him, and says to Andrew Jones, unsolicited, you're the best I've ever seen.
Okay, that, I mean, just write that out, and that should be his ticket to the Hall of Fame
Willie
right there.
Fucking Mays, man.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Man.
Yeah.
That had to give him chills.
Oh, my God. And that's what TP said. You know, when I hear Willie Mays say that to Andrew Jones, that's all I need to hear right there.
Yeah.
He said, here's the quote exactly. He said, if Willie Mays walked up to him and I heard him tell Andrew Jones in Frisco, hey, kid, you're the best I've seen, that ought to tell you the whole story right there. That's TP.
It makes me mad I didn't get to appreciate that or watch him, you know, enough as a kid, because when you don't appreciate it, you don't get to see it on TV. You know, if I could have gone to some Braves games as a kid and watched him roam around out there, you know, that'd have been so cool.
I am very glad that I got to see him both when I started covering the Marlins in 95 and then got here in 02, and he was still, you know, the best in the game when I got here in 02, still making those unbelievable catches.
Yeah.
So I got to see him play a whole lot when he was young, and easily the best I've ever seen, easily. And I covered Devon White, you know, for a year in Florida. A few other really good center fielders, and none of them even compare. And a lot of people said Devon White was great, you know, at the time was the best. A lot of people were comparing him, you know, when Andrew came along, said Devo's still the best I've seen. No, not even close, man.
So. Well, that's how it was with Andrelton too, you know, but people were comparing him to Ozzie Smith, and people that hadn't seen him play on a daily basis really didn't want to hear that. But you get a chance to watch that guy play day in, day out. You know, I mean, I feel blessed to have even been able to watch that show in person as often as I did, you know, because that's, for me, that's probably the best shortstop I've ever seen. Well, he's the best shortstop I've ever seen, but I don't know if he's the best ever or not. But I haven't seen anybody that can do the things Simmons can do consistently on the baseball field. And I tried to go over to Oakland and tell the guys, there was a debate in the outfield one day, you know, Shag and BP, and they were saying Hechavarria might be the best in the game. They were going over who the shortstops were, and I was like, man, it's not even close. And everybody was kind of giving me attitude, like, yo, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I might not, but I know TP does, and I know, you know, Chipper Jones does, and they're all telling me that he's the best shortstop they've seen, and they're comparing him to Ozzie, saying he's, you know, he's up there, maybe better. So I don't think there's anybody in the game that can compare with this guy right now. And then luckily, you know, he got traded over to LA a few years later, and I was getting texts from some of those guys like, all right, we get it now.
You got to see him every day, man.
You got to see it. You got to watch it.
Play inning after inning after inning to see all the little stuff he did and the spectacular stuff he did. I mean, I can't believe people that if there's another guy during his era that they say was better, then they just didn't see Andrelton play.
You didn't watch him. You didn't watch him hold the tag on the runner every time they stood up for 9 innings, 162 games a year. I mean, every single runner that ever gets to second base, he tries to get him. And he gets, what, one or two a year. He gets a guy that steps off the bag while he's holding the ball and he gets an out. It's because he tries it like 17,000 times. You know, like, yeah, you don't, people, yeah, don't appreciate those things. You don't appreciate the plays where he loses his balance and he's sitting on his ass and still able to reach over and barehand the ball and throw across the outfield. Like, this, the things you see watching him every day. And that's kind of what I mean with Andrew too. Like, you know, I wish I would have gotten to see him every day so I could have the appreciation for him like I do for Simmons.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, I might have covered two guys that were the best at their positions at least in the last half century and maybe of all time. That's pretty crazy, man.
That, you're really lucky.
And I know I did with Andrelton. There's no doubt in my mind, because all I need to know is TP, who played next to Ozzie Smith. Yeah. He played, you know, 25 feet away from him, said that Andrelton Simmons is Ozzie Smith with a stronger arm. You know?
I mean, you can't get a better compliment than that. And no, he'll be an interesting case too. You know, if he kind of puts up decent offensive numbers, and when he gets to that point, you know, you'll be having that same debate.
Injury's the only thing that could keep him out of the Hall of Fame, you know, because it's prevented him from having that gold glove streak.
And he's had a lot of injuries. He has his back all the time. But that's the same thing with Andrew too, is he's laying out.
And he plays he tries to make
plays that are impossible all year long. You know, like, he dives for balls that there's no way you're even going to get the guy if you come up with it clean. And sometimes he does come up with it and fire 100 miles an hour, and you know, the guy beats it by a step or two, and 90% of shortstops just let it roll into the outfield.
Remember how hard Andrelton swings and how that ankle rolls? His ankle rolls over like every swing just about.
Yeah.
Like, it rolls over. You're like, how does it roll over like that and not just like dislocate?
Snap.
But if he didn't swing so hard, maybe he wouldn't have the injuries he's had. But a lot of them have been, you know, from the offensive, from stuff, you know, in a box, coming out of the box, getting hit, you know, that kind of thing. Not many of them have been playing defense, although there have been a couple.
Diving, I mean, you got to think diving's hard on the back.
Yeah,
but
no doubt. Yeah,
he plays. So he doesn't. Hard. I mean, he only has one speed. It's max effort. I played a video game against him once, a soccer video game. He just held the turbo button the whole damn game. I was like, dude, you're the same on this game as you are out on the field.
That's the other thing, is I told people when they traded Andrelton, I'm like, beyond being the best shortstop I've ever seen, why you don't trade, you know, the guy's the best at his position.
Yeah.
Period. Best at something. You just don't trade those guys. He was the guy, I said to people at the time, I've never been around a guy that wanted to win or that hated to lose more than this guy. He hated to lose. After a game, man, he looked like he was crushed when they lost, you know, whether he did anything or not. He just looked like he was hurting after losses.
Yeah, I mean, that's what drives him to be great. You know, sometimes it can't just be all about you. It's you got to have a bigger goal. He definitely does. I bet it's killing him to be out in L.A. next to Mike Trout and they can't win.
Yeah. He's probably getting excited now, though. The new GM and new things are going to try to do. Yeah. I think Perry's going to get it done out there. We're going to see, but I think he will. Last guy on the list, Barry Zito. No. Another of the – I'm assuming you're a no?
Yeah, he's a no. I mean, he just didn't do it long enough. He had a pretty damn good stretch in Oakland.
What a curveball, though. So two of Oakland's big three are on here. Not Mulder's the only one's not. So there's the Hall of Fame ballot. I'm looking at it. I've got about, I don't know. I have to go back through. I think about six guys I'm going to vote for. You get up to 10, and I've used 10 in recent years because there's been – arguably 12, you know, in recent years, but I'm not even voting for a steroid guy. So I'll probably vote for about six of these guys and we'll see. It'll be interesting, man. I hope they get to have the ceremony because it really is in danger, obviously, but they're already combining last year's with this year's if they have it. So if they don't have it, it's going to be 3 years of guys and Jeter's going to be waiting a second year to go in. You know, and he's killing all those fans that want to reserve houses and places up in Cooperstown where you have to get a place early. All those Jeter fans and, you know, who was it? Jeter and it's a great class. What was the other one? Why am I drawing a blank? Larry Walker, right?
Yeah, Larry Walker.
Jeter, Larry Walker. Is it just those two?
I'm not sure, man. It's been such a long year. I can look for you. Larry Walker.
Jeter and Larry Walker. So they're going to have massive crowds there, obviously. Yeah. Well, people Canada coming down too. from Canada.
Yeah.
And then Jeter, the New Yorkers, obviously. You know, and then Larry Walker played for a cup for the Rockies, and they're going to have their fan base there. So, yeah. Anyway, so we'll see. So they're going to be combined with this year's class, whoever gets in. Moving on, we've got the Drew Smyly signing. What was your first thought on that? My first thought was, okay, this is interesting. Then my second thought was, after I looked at his numbers and what he did last year, was, oh, yeah. Then I remembered how good he was for a while last year. It got lost in the shuffle because he's in San Francisco last year, and they just weren't much of a factor.
From, yeah.
Yeah, they were okay for part of the year, but, you know, he got hurt. And when he came back, people had moved their focus onto other people. You know, he hurt a middle finger or index finger on his throwing hand. But he really put up good numbers with him for his, you know, 1 month that he was healthy.
Well, I was thinking that they were going to go that Wainwright route, but I think what A likes to do is just go for max potential on these 1 year deals. You know, if he's going to take a gamble and shoot for a guy, he just goes the highest upside possible.
Yeah.
And Smiley's a guy that, you know, he's finally healthy. Had some surgeries. I think he had Tommy John.
Tommy John missed 2 years. 2 years with Tommy John.
But I think the big factor that makes a team feel good signing him was his velocity was up. And, you know, velocity is not everything, but it's just it's a sign that everything's working well and you're healthy is when your velocity's up.
And for a guy who's 31 to have an uptick in velocity by 2 miles an hour, 2.5 miles an hour last year.
Yeah, that's not a fluke.
He's obviously made an adjustment and doing things differently now because he always had a good curveball, but he junked the changeup and focused on the curveball last year. And his spin rate is up there. The Braves are going to have two of the best curveballs in baseball next year.
Yeah.
In that rotation.
Yeah.
Two lefties.
I wouldn't throw them back to back. So you give them different looks, but that's, you know, him and Max would be able to play off each other too, but. I don't think it's a bad signing at all. $10 million seemed high for me at first, but that's what $11 million. It only seemed high because I thought this offseason was going to be so bad, and it is it is pretty damn slow. But I didn't think guys were going to get anything realistic at all. I thought it was going to be higher all bad than
anybody
numbers,
projected. But
I didn't think anybody be getting more than they expected.
But like you said, Alex is really aggressive with these guys and goes for the upside.
Yeah.
So they are willing to go out early in the market, and maybe if they end up overpaying, they're willing to take that risk, like they did with Donaldson when they gave him. A lot of people said, "You're going to give Donaldson the same amount of money he made last year when he was hurt almost the entire season." You know what I mean? Then Ozuna, they gave him the same. They gave him a little more than the qualifying offer that he turned down. So, but it worked out splendidly for both. It didn't with Hamels, obviously.
Yeah, but, I mean, they say there's no such thing as a bad 1 year deal, and AA definitely. I mean, I think he believes in that.
So this guy had a 3.42 ERA in 7 games, including 5 starts, but he had 42 strikeouts, 9 walks, 2 homers allowed, and 26 in the third innings. Hitters hit 198 against him with a 261 OBP and a 297 slugging percentage. Those are all career best.
And a 1 whip.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty dominant.
So he started the season in their bullpen, made 2 appearances, both against the Dodgers. Then made his first start, left after 4 innings with a strained finger. That was August 1st. Didn't return until September 10th. But when he did come back, had 8 strikeouts in a 4-inning relief appearance against the Padres while allowing 2 hits and a walk. Then he moved into the rotation, stayed there the rest of the way. He had 8 strikeouts in 3 2/3 innings of a start against Seattle, his first one. First start after he moved into rotation. Then he had back-to-back his best and longest outings of the season. He had 5 1/3 innings, 1-run ball, 92 pitches against the Rockies. Finished with a 10-strikeout, 1-walk performance against the Padres, who were in the throes of the playoff race at that time. Gave up 3 hits and 2 runs.
Well, think about, you know who I think about is Rich Hill. Because Rich Hill had a ton of injuries and never really put up those big numbers. And then he got called up with Boston and just had a good August.
Uh-huh.
And Oakland wound up giving him, I think, $6 or $10 million. And everybody's kind of like, you know, what are you doing? You know, but that's where scouting is so important. And a team sees something in you that they really like. And if it turns into a deal like that, Rich Hill was a steal that next year for $6 million. So it'd be great if, you know, what he's showing toward the end of the season, if he can back it up next year, it'd turn into just a steal.
And another guy that, you know, they're not going to sign a guy to be a de facto coach or to be a second coach out in, you know, with these young guys, but it helps when you got those intangibles. And this is another guy, even more so than Hamels, I think, who really outgoing, personable, and learned when he was coming up. He went to the World Series. He went to the playoffs first 2 years in the majors with the Tigers, just out of college, right?
Yeah,
pitched in a World Series his first year. And he learned from Scherzer and from Verlander. Those are the guys that were in when he broke in. And he said he learned a ton from those guys.
Yeah.
And he's ready to do that same stuff. You know, he goes, I knew the Braves were young, but I didn't realize how young they were till Alex told me how young each of the starters were. Yeah. You know, all rookies last year except Fried. You know, and Soroka, obviously. So
you just don't see that too much with playoff teams. You know, it used to be you had this established staff.
Crazy.
I mean, they are established. You know what you're getting out of them at this point, especially a couple of dudes.
So, yeah, in those four September games after coming off the IL, Smiley had a 3.50 ERA, 191 opponents average, 31 strikeouts, 5 walks, 2 homers allowed in 18 innings. 31 Ks in 18 innings.
That's pretty damn good.
Huge spin rate on the curve. Fastball was average career best 93.8 last year. That's pretty impressive. It's up 2.6 miles an hour over 2019. Alex said our approach the last few years has been to be specific and to target certain guys and to be aggressive when we can get those things done. You know, making those early moves like they did last year when they went out and got Will Smith, and then they got Darno. He compared him to Darno. In fact, the age, the fact that they thought each is coming off a year that portended to a breakthrough kind of thing. He thinks that, like Darno, that Will Smith or Smiley's entering his prime late, that he's just starting to have his best years. He thinks he's going to have 2 or 3 really good years coming up, like just like Darno.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hardest thing to tell is when guys are saying, you know, I'm finally healthy. It's easy to have, like, you know, a good month and say, well, that's because I'm finally healthy. Or if they're going to be able to stay healthy, you know, like the finally healthy guy it's a red flag because he's finally healthy. You know, like he's gone through so many different injuries and stuff. I mean, this year, the finger thing is kind of a fluke thing that doesn't really scare you, but missing 2 years with Tommy John is scary. I mean, there's definitely some risk here, but it's not that big a risk for what you could possibly get if he's back to putting up those numbers he's putting up.
Yeah. And the Tommy John, the good thing is normally you don't have he had it relatively late, and you normally don't have it again that soon. I know there's exceptions like Chris Medlin, obviously.
Yeah.
But normally it's like kind of like Venters, you know, where he had it. I think Johnny had it in high school or first
Johnny
year out.
Johnny had it, I think, first really early in the minors, like maybe 04, 05.
And then not again for like, what, 8 years, something like
that? Yeah. Yeah, normally, I mean, I think it does buy you a lot of time. Some guys, there's a freak thing. But that's why I think that, for me, that's why the velocity is so important, because most of the guys that are going to have it again – they never look the same in the first place. You know, like there's something going on in the first place where their mechanics still look jacked up or the ball's not coming out of their hand the same. A guy that gets his full velocity back normally makes you feel pretty good about it.
So last year, the official strikeout leaders, strikeouts per nine innings, were Tampa Bay, two from Tampa Bay, Nick Anderson, 14.33, and Tyler Glasnow, 14.28. Shane Bieber had 14.20 per nine innings. Jacob DeGrom had 13.76. Trevor Bauer, for those interested, he was 12.33. And you know what a strikeout machine he was.
Yeah.
Okay. Smiley didn't quite have the innings to qualify, or he would have led all of them. 14.35 strikeouts per nine innings.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's Kimbrel. That's Kimbrel's strikeout, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I went and looked, since he didn't have the innings to qualify, I went and looked at the guys that were ahead of him. The only guy who faced as many as 110 batters and had a higher strikeout rate than Smiley was Freddie Peralta at 14.42. That's the only guy that faced as many batters and had a higher strikeout rate.
Damn.
So we'll see. But could be a real good signing. And the thing is, what I like about it is it doesn't block any of these young guys because it's not multi-year.
Yes.
It's not a guy coming off an injury like Hamels had, where Hamels had was coming off a shoulder injury, you know?
He had two injuries. Yeah, he wasn't the same last year.
Yeah. No. You know, he ended the season injured. And they came into camp injured.
Yeah.
You know? So, and he's 37. This guy's 31. Had the index finger thing now last year. But, you know, I think the risk reward is pretty substantial with this guy. And the other thing is you're not in a position where you were a year ago when you signed Hamels, is you were relying on him.
Right. They don't need him.
No. Worst case scenario, you've got enough guys to fill out a formidable rotation as it is, you know, but he could make you a lot better.
Yeah, no doubt. He could. There's still guys that you're counting on Kyle Wright to be the good Kyle Wright you saw.
Right.
You know, you're hoping Bryce Wilson's the guy that showed up in the playoffs, but there's still plenty of question marks.
But Soroka this is a nice, healthy.
Yeah, it's a nice blend where he can be in your staff until Soroka's back, and those guys can kind of fight out and figure out, you know, where they're at and what they can do until Soroka comes back, and then it makes that decision once that all wraps up. You've kind of seen what you're going to get out of some other guys before Soroka comes back, but this guy can kind of fill that void too. It's a nice blend.
This guy could potentially be as good or better number four starter as anybody in the league if he does what he did last year. And if they get what they got last year out of Fried and Ian Anderson, and Soroka is Soroka when he comes back, then I can see Smiley at number four. I mean, that's a hell of a number four.
Maybe they're planning for another COVID playoff.
Yeah, how about if you
no days off?
How about if you had, when Soroka's healthy, how about if you had Soroka, Fried, Ian Anderson, Smiley, so you separate the lefties?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's probably how you lay it out too.
And then you got either
a ton Kyle of candidates Wright, for that fifth spot. Yeah,
Kyle Wright or Wilson.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't go wrong with that, man.
Yeah,
potentially. And what you like about it too is, you don't have to worry about injuries with those young guys the way you do with older guys who are starting to, you know, kind of break down a little bit. Most of those young guys should be really good next year. You know, Soroka was a freak thing. It was Achilles. None of those guys have had arm problems.
No, but this
freak,
you know,
was years ago.
I think it would be a little scary not signing anybody and going into it. You know what I mean?
I totally agree.
This is a nice blend of having some certainty and a guy that you think's healthy and going to help you and until Soroka comes back, and then you make some little harder decisions, but you know it gives Wright and Wilson a chance to kind of fight out that fifth spot too.
Yeah, it's kind of like what you went into last year before the bottom just fell out when you had six guys going for five spots, and you're like, how are you going to fit these six guys in? Well, you ended up not being a problem. Yeah,
those things work themselves out.
But you had six, and you have six this time, you know, at least, you know, you have six quality guys, and I'm sure they're going to add somebody before, you know, spring training too, because you're about to have some guys get non-tendered, and they're going to be available too. That's going to be December 2nd, the non-tender date.
That's going to be a massacre.
I think so too.
Just some of the guys you've seen get, you know, released or waived or their options denied. I think anybody fringe, especially with all the COVID stuff still not really sorted out, I think anybody fringe where it's a tough decision, they're just going to opt for smell you later.
Yeah. So the Braves, you know, this would have been a year where they would have had a whole lot of decisions. Last week was the deadline to add guys to the 40-man roster. Friday was. And before last year, you thought the Braves are going to have quite a few guys are going to make these tough calls on. But as it turned out, they ended up using all these guys last year. So, you know, the guys that you would have had to, you really don't – they're either on the 40 now or, you know, you didn't – bottom line, you didn't have many left. And Kyle Muller was the one kind of exception, the guy you obviously had to add to the 40 because he needed to be protected or he would have been poached. 6'7" left-hander throws 100 miles an hour. You know, yeah, he's going to get picked up if he didn't. So they added him last week to the 40. And they're still only at 38 on the 40-man roster. So they can add. They signed this guy. They signed kind of a journeyman-type utility guy. Another pretty good signing, I think. Jack Mayfield from the Astros. He had what jumped off the page to me. He's 30 years old. He was off. He was out of options. So the Astros, not out of options, but the Astros waived him. So the Braves picked him up. So he gives you him and Camargo both have options left. So they can be sent down to AAA. And the thing is, this guy, he hasn't done anything in the big leagues, but he's not played hardly any at all in the big leagues. Couple brief appearances the last 2 years, 112 total plate appearances with the Astros. Haven't done much at all. But 2 years ago, AAA Round Rock, he hit .287 with 26 home runs and a .916 OPS in 100 games. So there's obviously some juice there in that bat. So that's an interesting signing. He gives you another utility guy because right now Charlie's not on the team. You know, he left as a minor league free agent because he didn't take a AAA assignment. The Braves could bring him back if he doesn't have another offer, which I expect they probably will.
Yeah, he will.
But this nice guy to add, another guy along those lines, former OU guys, University of Oklahoma guy. But shortstop, second, third base. Can't have too many of those guys, especially if you don't know about a Echevarria.
You just never know when one of those guys is going to turn into Max Muncy. You know, I mean, yeah. I think every team's got to pick those guys up. But I remember I was in Oakland with Max Muncy, and I thought he sucked. he barely got in, and when he got in, he didn't do well. And it's just there's these guys that just never clicks at the big league level. Then all of a sudden, 2 years later, I'm watching TV and he's in LA and he's hitting 35 homers after hitting 186 when we were teammates. You know, you never know. So I think if you got to trust your scouts and always be trying to make these little moves because every once in a while one of them hits and you get a superstar out of it.
Guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The rules, we talked about the rules that we liked. Jason Stark did a thing this week on the rule because it was pretty much that's a popular opinion across baseball is a lot of guys, traditionalists, old school people like myself, ended up liking a lot of these rules like the runner at second base and the seven inning doubleheaders and what else. But the one that nobody likes, it seems like, managers.
Three batter minimum
because it didn't really do any of the stuff that they talked about it doing. You know, it didn't quicken the pace of the games. You know, it didn't stop guys from making a lot of pitching changes within an inning. What was your thoughts on that? I know it's hard to judge it in the COVID year.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to judge it because there's so many pitching changes anyway.
Yeah.
You know, all the teams are taking their starters out in the fourth inning anyway. You know, I my thought is it's definitely a buzzkill. You're playing September game and it's the game's going along, or even the playoffs, right when the game starts to get interesting, and then you got to take all these commercial breaks, you know, just from the standpoint of watching the game on TV. I get that aspect of it, not wanting these commercial breaks, because when that lefty trots out of the bullpen to face one hitter and you see, you know, a minute and a half of action over 6 minutes at the biggest, most crucial point of the game, I get that it's a buzzkill. But I don't think it makes any difference, you know, for pace of play, because the game's just, there's too many moves anyway. You know, you're taking the starters out, you're making all these moves, relievers. I think the strike zone's too tight. They're bitching about every single call back and forth all game long. Every game has just turned into Red Sox Yankees anyway, with that bats that everybody has. I just feel like MLB's just playing gimmick roulette, trying to speed up these games. And I just don't know if there's a way to do it other than opening up the strike zone and basically telling everybody to shut up and play ball.
I think the reason why it's tough to judge part of that this year in the COVID year is because you had expanded roster, so you had more pitchers. So guys were making more pitching changes because they could. So I think you probably need a normal year to be able to judge the rule, you know, whether, you know, it achieved what you had hoped it would. It's kind of tough to judge it this year, but I don't like it. But you know what it had? Effect of guys like Freddie Freeman and Bryce Harper not having to face as many left-handed relievers this year.
Yeah.
The percentage was pretty interesting. Bryce Harper went from 39.2% in 2018 to 37.4% in 2019 to 21.6% this year. Freddie's case, it wasn't nearly as much of a drop. Jason Stark had this in his column. Freddie was 39.2% in 2018, 30% in 2019, 28.2% this year. But obviously,
they
got like
Did they have the three batter minimum last year? They didn't have it, right?
No.
This is the first year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder why he faced less anyway.
Yeah, I don't know why. Why that.
Well, still having Donaldson behind him probably discouraged teams from, you know, making that move in the first place.
Hey, just I saw a couple more of my notes here before we wrap it up. Andrew Jones, I saw a great stat from Ryan Spader, the stats guru. This is incredible. Okay, there's been six seasons where a center fielder had at least 25 defensive runs saved and 25 home runs. Six in history. Andrew Jones had four of them. That's insane, man. That is crazy.
Damn. Who had the other two?
He didn't have that. Who had the other two? It's got to be Willie Mays, right? Because they go back and do it retroactively. The defense. It has to be. Only one I could think is Griffey. Griffey could have had him.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So it has to be those. I can't think of anybody else that might have had him. I was thinking you were talking about diving and all that stuff. The guy that did the ultimate guy was Jim Edmonds. Remember how many times Jim Edmonds dove?
Because he'd slow down.
He was always hurt too. Tim Hudson, I had jotted down a couple of things, man. Tim Hudson was better than some people think, man. This guy, he had the consecutive 16 win seasons with the Braves before he broke his ankle in that shortened 2013. Remember that when he broke his ankle, when he got stepped on first?
That was brutal.
That was nasty. Yeah. And we thought he was done. And he came back and had the hell of a year. Went to the Giants and won a World Series. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Huddy. I just hate that Fred McGriff is not on the ballot now. That just still seems criminal to me. And it's been years now that since Murph fell off the ballot. So that's up to the committee.
You think the committee gets them both in?
I do think so. I think McGriff for sure. They already had a chance with Murph, and I was astounded that he didn't even get it didn't even come close still with the Veterans Committee. I just don't get it, man. I don't get it at all.
I think McGriff will.
I don't get it, but I think McGriff will. I don't see how you keep McGriff out. I really don't. But talking about the three batter rule, a couple of quotes that Jason had in here. Terry Francona said, "I hate it more than he did before the season started." Joe Girardi said, "If the commissioner is listening, this is the dumbest rule that we've ever put in because it changes the strategy of the game."
Yeah.
He said, "I still think the beauty of the game is the chess match. The beauty of the game really starts with the players and what they're able to do. So now, once you have these ultra talented players, then you start to get into the second beauty of the game. And I think that's the strategy. And I'm all for every rule change in our game as long as it doesn't change the strategy. But I think this change really changed the strategy."
Well, yeah, you saw the numbers.
If it says supposed to help the hitters, Girardi said, "And if they said it was to add offense, I'd say they may accomplish that."
Yeah.
So there's no doubt it did.
That's the whole predicament the league's in anyways. They're trying to find offense and have more offense in a faster game. And it just doesn't work like that. A little less chaotic movements
and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted faster games, just open up the strike zone. Be really fast. You know, the back and forth. When I came up into the league, a fastball down and away at the knees, an inch or two off the plate was an automatic strike. And now guys get ejected over pitches that are a centimeter off the plate. You know, that's what drags the game out.
No doubt. And enforce the rule between time between pitches and don't let guys roam around and adjust their batting gloves after every single pitch. Don't let some pitchers stalk around the mound, especially some closers, after every pitch. It's just drama, you know?
Yeah.
Every pitch is drama.
See, I tried to do the opposite. I didn't want to think. I was golfing with these guys the other day, and we were talking about some baseball stuff, and I told them, I was like, you know how many times I shook during my career? And they were expecting like me to be this really thoughtful like answer. I was like, one time. And it was because JC Boscon was filling in for BMAC. And I knew it was the wrong pitch. So I shook once my whole career. The rest of the time, I just got on the mound and threw the ball.
Man, you know, the ultimate to me, I know there's been guys that have been a slower. The guy that stands out to me, both because of the time he took and the way he stared in over his glove and all this stuff, it was just – the Papelbon show.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't stand watching Papelbon.
Yeah.
The game would be flying along 2 hours through eight innings, and then Papelbon comes in. And it's like, oh, God, here we go. It was just a drama. Every pitch was drama. It's like, dude, just pitch.
I don't know how guys do that.
God drove me crazy.
It's too much time to think.
God drove me crazy.
Yeah, he drove a lot of people crazy. I heard he's a pretty funny guy, but, man, if you strike out the side and it takes 9 minutes – I need you to speed it up.
The time that him and Bryce Harper got in a fight, everybody's like, I don't know who to pull for. That was an all-timer. Anyway. All right, man. That's it for now. We got plenty more we'll talk about next week on this thing. It's gonna be a slow Thanksgiving week probably. Yeah. But you never know. Copy once made a signing on Thanksgiving Day. Thanksgiving Day. So we'll see. Not many guys are like Copy, though. We'll be back. We'll be back. We're going to stay with y'all all off season. We'll talk about all this shit that goes down. And we got got some good stuff coming up. Interesting stuff.
All right. Sounds good.
Interesting stuff.